dead prayers. The cool people army. Where the G's at? Come on. Oh, the police. Hey, y'all ready for this mission, y'all Trump? Y'all ready to get this bitch crump?
You got to get up right now. Turn the system upside down. You're supposed to be fed up by now.
It's cool.
Turn the system upside down.
Honestly, I'm against this government. I ain't got to cover it up, that's what I meant. Sick of paying bills and I'm sick of paying rent. Seem like I work all the time but don't know where the money went. And the funny shit is we supposed to like this ish. But all y'all politicians could bite this ish. It's a war going on, the ghetto is a cage. They only give you two choices, be a rebel or a slave.
So what you do?
So I rebel. Like an ulcer in the belly of the beast, staying true to it. Since my holding streak days in the blue Buick. Niggas been fighting so long, seem like I'm used to it. Now what y'all know about how the cool do it? Truth fluid, booth put the funk to it. Ain't nothing to it. This is for the cheese all the way to the bay. From Frisco to Oakland, all over
you
LA.
Got to get up right now. Turn the system upside down. You're supposed to be fed up by now. Turn the system upside down.
Now, this fella's piss yellin'. Never been a snitch teller. One pay stub for my homeless dish dweller. Yellin' up a Rockefeller. My shit bumpin' a cappella. My lyrical quotes enough is note the bank teller. We can call it off. We haulin' off Molotovs and bricks. Mr. Bailiff, you can put that in the transcript. So your mother don't get petty wagon band flips. Some stuff it off. I prefer hand grips. Quote us. You know we stronger than a 3-day notice. Pay or quit. It's more of us than the lies that your mayor spit. I'm on some I hate the game. We love the players. Ish. Is you a have or you a have not? When you run out of bullets, grab rocks. Cause the prison don't slam locks. It don't open when your fam knocks, unless you rich and have stocks. Fight the power like a motherfucking Zulu. It's the coup plus the new Mehmet Tulu. So raise your hands in the air like you're born again. But make a fist for the struggle when you're born to win.
Right now, turn the system upside down. You're supposed to be fed up by now.
When I whoop whoop, I be ducking them hoes. I can smell a pig coming, so I stay on my toes. On the low from Popo, so off the whole lease. Cause peace to me is loaded under my seat. And I know power respect that, so serve and protect that. I'm young, black, and just don't give a fuck, try me. Grilling you right back, you better drive by me. We the people army is known to get rowdy. And even if you a friend of the blue, you can get it too. Snitching is never forgettable. This hell we living is never forgivable. It come down to DP in the coup. Remember Huey, Bobby Hutton, George, Fred, and them. Off the Popo, local, state fair to them. You better choose your side, Crip, Blood, 415. It's one team, get up and let's ride.
Get up right now. Turn the system upside down. You're supposed to be fed up by now. Turn the system upside down.
Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm your host, Burst of Goodness.
The Final Straw is also available at KXCF 91.7 Marshall, California.
And The Final Straw is brought to you by contributions from Firestorm Books and Cafe here in Asheville, 48 Commerce Street, providing you with very tasty vegan treats, organic coffees and milks, lots of great baked goods, and a good book selection, and an online community calendar that is available at www.firestormcafe.com. Okay, well, in a second, we're going to be bringing you a conversation with Sarah Lee from the... Okay, hold on one second, sorry. How very unprofessional of me. Okay. Today's show will feature an interview with Sarah Lee from the Greensboro Almighty Latin Kings and Queens Nation Defense Network, but first a few announcements. First, I'd like to proudly announce that The Final Straw will be rebroadcast via the airwaves at KXCF in Marshall, California. I want to offer a hearty hello to my comrades in the North Bay. A little reminder to folks around the country that tomorrow, Monday, December 12th, folks from the Occupy movement and labor unions are going to try to shut down the West Coast ports in solidarity with the ILWU longshoremen struggling against EGT in Longview, Washington, and against what they have dubbed the 1%. And it's not just the coast. Other cities are taking the idea and running with it. Denver, for instance, is planning to block a local Walmart distribution center. So you can check out www.occupytogether.org for local actions you can get involved in. In somewhat related news, Occupy Asheville has learned that Mayor Terry Bellamy has requested and had drafted three potential laws to be passed by city council to block people's efforts to camp on city property. And they are specifically targeted from having read an internal email of myself that was sent from Bellamy and the city council. It's very clear that they were drafted for the purpose of stopping the Occupy movement around here. It's kind of weird. But apparently, and this is hearsay, but this is what I'm going to go with because it does make sense. Homeland Security in preparation for the Democratic Convention, which is going to be happening in Charlotte in next year, has been offering help to cities to sort of stave off the possibility that cities' Occupy movements could be brought together and organized in a way to offer more protest base for the Democratic Convention. And Charlotte considers Asheville as a potential staging ground for protests happening in Charlotte during the DNC next summer. So Terry Bellamy, as far as I'm aware, has not been having conversations with, and this is what has been announced by the city, is they have not been in direct conversation with the Department of Homeland Security, but that Charlotte has, and the city of Asheville has been in conversation with Charlotte. And so the DHS is drafting these model laws for a lot of cities around North Carolina as we approach the upcoming convention and protests that I'm sure will follow. So if you're in town and if this concerns you, you should definitely show up to city council meeting on Tuesday night, I believe at 5 o'clock, down at City Hall. Also, a few other events. On December 17th, which is a Saturday, there's going to be a really, really free market. From the flyer, which I'm crinkling in my hand right now, it's going to be at Pritchard Park, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bring things, skills, and whatever else you want to share. Free as in free stuff, but also free as in human relationships, unmediated by commodities. Think of it as an experimental yard sale where everything is freely given. Just bring your still usable stuff to give away and take home whatever you want. Also, there are going to be workshops going on at the same time at Firestorm Cafe, again, 48 Commerce Street. It's just right across the street from Pritchard Park. And among them is going to be a discussion on anti-corporate versus anti-capitalist perspectives. I'm not sure what the other workshops are lined up, but I know last time they had some pretty good ones. That evening, there's going to be a photo show happening at Firestorm also. A local activist who went up to New York and was there about an hour, like up until about an hour before the camp at Zuccotti Park or Freedom Plaza was raided, recorded lots of video and photos and has practiced giving this presentation a couple of times. I've seen some of the shots. They're really, really nice. There are going to be prints available of some of the photos, and that's going to benefit this ongoing or just recently started attempt to start a community clinic here in Asheville. So it is a charitable event. Bring some dough and buy some nice presents for the holiday season. Last but not least, on Monday the 19th, There is going to be a showing of The Chicago Conspiracy at Firestorm Cafe, which I'm putting on, again, 48 Commerce Street. Please feel free to show up. It's going to be starting at 7 p.m., and that film is about the end of the Pinochet dictatorship, about neoliberal capitalism and the introduction of neoliberal capitalism in, like, it was already there during the military dictatorship, but now what it's turned into after the dictatorship, the end of free education, the continued suppression of Mapuche indigenous tribes in Chile, and student resistance and just popular resistance to the state. So hopefully we can have a nice discussion after that too. But I'm going to bring on the air Sara Lee. I think I can be heard. Let's see. Are you there, Sara? Oh, just a second, I can't hear. Oh, hey, there you are.
I can hear y'all. I don't know if you can hear me.
Absolutely, totally clear. Thank you so much for being on the air with me at such short notice. Today we're speaking with Sara Lee from the Greensboro ALKQN Defense Network. Sara Lee, can you tell me what happened on Tuesday, December 6th at 8 a.m. across North Carolina?
Yeah, I kind of have this weird situation where I happen to be both neighbors and close friends, like, and political comrades with folk in the nation. So a friend was actually driving to work and got a call like, yo, Jay's house is being raided by the cops. And so, you know, we like run out and think that we're dealing with like GPP, and it turns out there are about 35 like elite tactical unit, like coalition of FBI, ATF, GPD, which is Greensboro Police Department, Safe Streets Task Force, which is actually a post 9/11 partnership all across North Carolina. It exists in Charlotte, I think in Raleigh too, in Greensboro, between the FBI and the GPD, for like quote unquote violent gang issues, which we don't have. But anyways, they were raiding the house across the street from us, which is where leaders and members and family of all my Latin King and Queen Nation in Greensboro live, where King Jay lives, who we'll be talking a lot about, I guess, in this. And the race went on for hours and hours. I had already gotten a call that the Kings, they had taken two men, Charles Moore and Jorge Cornell, who live across the street, were already downtown, like, getting processed, and we didn't know where the families was, and then all of a sudden, like, an hour goes by, we're recording everything, making phone calls, trying to figure out what's going on, and we see all of the women and children be taken outside and are allowed to, like, pack up their car, and they immediately just drive over to our house, and we start kind of processing about what's going on. But they basically said that, you know, it was 8 in the morning, they were cooking breakfast, there's like tons of kids and it's a big family house, and they get a, you know, one of those like sound grenade things that go through the back to try and get people run out the front, but of course no one's running because there's nothing but family like eating breakfast in the house.
Wait,
and
so they threw a stun grenade through the window or the door?
They did it at the back door.
Like a flashbang?
Yeah, damn. Yeah, one of those. So that it sounds like they're coming in through the back, but they're actually coming in through the front, you know? Whatever, the FBI was saying it's a tactic to get people to run one way when they're coming the other. But no one ran. I mean, everyone just was, they immediately had, everyone, including children, had guns pointed in their face, were told to drop to the ground. Minors were handcuffed and photographed. A woman was taken out of the shower, refused to be allowed to get changed, had to come outside in a towel. Had like the babies outside with no clothes on, like it was just it was a mess. And so we both kind of had to deal with like taking care of the family and like making people feel safe and doing all that, and then immediately going down to the courthouse, the federal courthouse, because we learned that the reason the FBI is involved is that this is a unsealed federal indictment from the U.S. Justice Department, U.S. Attorney's Office, and U.S. Marshal Service with an arrest warrant of 13, some current and some former Latin kings across North Carolina on a case that they've been working on for years. And that there was actually going to be, we were going to have to, you know, go to the federal court that day and start figuring out how, what these charges were, how to deal with the grand jury, and basically just immediately, like, get on the floor running, trying to figure out what's going on. So as the day unfolds and we lawyer friends help us get the indictment so we can read over what's going on, we realize that it's basically 25 pages of, what amounts to hearsay, really vague allegations, half of which King Jay and other Latin kings in Greensboro have already fought and gotten completely dismissed on the state level. But because the Fed decided to pursue this case via RICO, which is the Racketeer Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act that was created in the late 60s, they are allowed to bring all of those charges back and have to fight them all over again on the federal level. So they're being detained between two county jails right now in Alamance County Jail and at Forsyth County Jail, and they have a detention hearing this Tuesday to figure out if they will, the federal magistrate has the ultimate, jurisdiction as to whether or not the men are allowed to await trial at their homes or in a jail cell. And as of right now, the prosecution person who's responsible for making the recommendation as to whether or not to even post bail is not recommending it for any of the men, even though every single one of these men that we're supporting, the six folks that have been in Greensboro and working on, community issues as wide-ranging from police brutality to, getting cops out of schools and all the stuff that you'll hear more about, we'll talk about, they are still, just because it's a grand jury, because it's a big case, are not recommending that anyone be allowed to go home. And as we know, in the anarchist community, these grand juries can take how many years sometimes?
Yeah.
So we're looking at, Tuesday, really putting pressure on the courts just to consider allowing these men to be able to, continue on their lives and build a defense for themselves, not in a, in jail, but at home where they belong. So
that's
the protest chunk of the story, I guess.
The protest on Tuesday you mentioned it's a detention hearing and public noise demo outside of the El Prayer Federal Courthouse at 324 West Market Street, right, in Greensboro, from 10 to 2:30. Is that correct?
Yeah, the two hearings are at 10 and at 2:30, so we want to be really loud and, present during those. And then the idea is that we're downtown, and Greensboro has, a rush hour like many cities, so if people have the endurance to stick it out till 5 o'clock, it'd be really great to kind of build up for rush hour to really see that there is a community of support out there of people that believe that these charges are completely ridiculous and that this is just another greater, more concentrated tactic to dismantle and discredit an organization that has stood up to state violence through and through for 5+ years in North Carolina.
So for people who are unfamiliar with the Almighty Latin Kings and Queens Nation, can you talk a little bit? It sounds like you've been doing some organizing with them for a while, right?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about the ALKQN until moving to Greensboro. I lived in the South for life, and they haven't been a really strong presence in the South. There, they were a nation, a street organization, what some people call gangs or networks. Formed in, I think, the late 60s or 70s kind of after the Young Lords had been pretty thoroughly, you know, assassinated, dismantled, discredited, starting in that tradition as a Latino-based, like, empowerment, you know, network of, like, you know, helping each other live and survive in really hostile urban territory with, like, a police state. And it turned pretty with, like, you know, everyone has their different kind of theory and histories of, like, gangs in this country with the, like, war on drugs and all of that and, like, concentrated collaboration with U.S. government, like, infiltrating, you know, urban areas. We all of a sudden see the nation turned more into, a, like, what's considered a quote-unquote violent kind of street cartel gang. But even within that, I mean, we have nation members in Greensboro who have been a part of, like, Chicago, which is considered a really brutal kind of area, who say that, you know, their experience was actually not part of a cartel gang even before the nation made this transition, which I'll talk about in a second. So, anyways, there's a mixed history of it. It was really strong in Chicago and New York, but King J, Jorge Cornell, who's kind of the epicenter of this case, got involved in the nation in New York, in Brooklyn, in the 90s when a leader was coming up. It's a hierarchical organization that has, like, a kind of complicated leadership structure, but when the leader in New York, King Tone, had looked back at the origins of the nation and then also kind of got in touch with Richie Perez, who was doing, I don't know if he was a political prisoner at that time, was doing Puerto Rican nationalist, like, anti-colonial struggle and was really involved in New York stuff, and it was like, hey, like, this is, we need to, like, shift our priorities, like, we've become, you know, kind of cannibalistic, and, like, we need to be fighting the real fight, which is against the state and against the police who are destroying our neighborhoods and destroying our people, and really, really cleaned up the nation, got rid of a lot of the stuff that was tearing the, you know, families apart, neighborhoods apart, and focused on more kind of political organizing, and started to become, show up on the front lines for a lot of different struggles against the police that were going on in New York. Anyways, King J followed up under King Tone, and King Tone actually got taken down, kind of similar to what's going on now and is what's been happening the last 10 years around the country, under, like, RICO charges, after charges he already, like, fought at the state level, he got taken down. But anyways, Jay moved to North Carolina with his family to really just, like, focus on his family and his life here, and he said that he basically, you know, just realized that Greensboro was really not a safe place for black and brown people, and that the police, you know, every time he went downtown, he was getting harassed, his friends were getting harassed, and this is before he even had, you know, asked to start the nation in Greensboro. And he was just like, we need to get together basically for self-defense of our community because we're just getting knocked down every time we try to even just go out on the weekends, every time we try to, like, do anything, the police are there taking us away. So they started in around 2005. They explicitly started as a, like, legal, transparent street organization. Since Jay has been involved, like, if you're in the nation, you're not allowed to sell drugs, you're not allowed to, like, be involved in quote-unquote black market activity, and mainly because even though he knows that it's really hard for young, like, men of color to, like, provide for themselves and their families, and there's a great defense as to why, you know, drug dealing isn't as, like, evil sometimes. People think it is, but even with all of that, like, he was just like, we can't afford to attract any unnecessary attention. Like, we're already, you know, being surveyed and being fucked with all the time. So, you know, the nation has been, like, totally clean since it started in Greensboro and has been explicitly to organize around black and brown unity in this very racially divided and, like, extreme police state that we live in Greensboro. So he's been going after the gang unit since he, you know, and has kind of effectively dismantled it a year and a half ago after every single charge that the gang unit brought against the nation didn't even fly in court because they weren't real. So it's not surprising we're seeing this repression because from the beginning it was clear the nation was forming to directly confront the white supremacist police state that, you know, that we live in Greensboro.
Can you talk a little bit about the paradigm shift document? And that, because that was really fascinating for me to find out about when I was looking around online on the defense page.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything after you said paradigm shift. You want me to just talk about that kind of history of that?
Yeah, if you could, that'd be great.
Okay, cool. So in 2008, folks in the ALKQN met this group called the Beloved Community Center that was started by a 1979 Klan massacre and like ex-communist survivor Milton Johnson. Had started this as like a network of like black churches and like the black community in Greensboro to also like raise and confront issues of racism in Greensboro. So they met up, and Jay basically was sharing his and the nation was sharing their experiences with the gang unit, but also trying to help get people to understand that there is not, and never has been, a violent gang problem in Greensboro. But Greensboro is a small city. It is, there's extreme disparities in wealth. It's a segregated city. There's, like, street crews and, like, ways in which people defend certain parts of their neighborhoods, but there is no, like concentrated fear of, like, gangs for anyone in the city. And he said, even though this isn't really like a huge issue, like, let's go ahead and have a peace treaty so that we can all start all of the different street crews, gangs, whatever you want to call them, street organizations, can kind of band together and start like focusing on what's really affecting their lives, their neighborhoods, their communities, and actually start working on that rather than, you know, pitting against each other. And they also did this as a preventative because they noticed that as the gang unit was getting running at its peak in 2008, they were going to different neighborhoods that had different strong, quote-unquote, strongholds and falsifying shit, like going into an MS-13 area and being like, yo, the kings are talking shit about you, they're going to do this, this, and that. And the kids, the folks, and in that neighborhood were like, no, they're not. Like, we're all friends. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the gang unit wasn't even doing their homework. Bloods and ALKQN, even in Chicago and New York, where it's a different scene, have been allies since, like, the 90s. So it was like, he basically did it to prove, A, that they were all capable of working together, and that, B, like, that they saw the big issue not as one another affecting their neighborhoods, but as the police coming in and tearing their neighborhoods apart and putting, you know, their men in prison and, like, tearing, all, you know, doing all that violence. That was actually the police and not each other. So the paradigm shift was basically the Beloved Community Center helping and working with the nation and some other groups. I think there are some Bloods and Crips involved to look at how they could actually effectively turn that theory of a peace treaty into practice, how they could, like, be working together to directly affect and challenge the racist police system. And some of that is kind of, they kind of confronted on three fronts. Like, it's a lot of education models of, like, teaching kids in schools and teaching teachers in schools what the reality of gangs are in Greensboro and not the, like, hyper-sensationalism, and so that they can start understanding certain behaviors, and also working with in to strengthen, like, community centers that already existed and places, mosques, churches, different things that were already, like, community centers, strengthening them to get folks to be able to for them to be more welcoming places where you can organize and stuff. There's a lot of different tactics, approaches to fighting this kind of divide and conquer that has plagued the neighborhoods. So it's been, some of the ideas in there are great. Some of them, you know, we've have proved themselves wrong in practice. Like, it actually has been impossible to work with the police. They refuse to acknowledge the peace treaty. They refuse to, like, quote-unquote, sit at the table. And so for anarchists, we're not surprised, right? But that has proved itself not to work in practice. So that's, even though that's in the document, that's kind of been a tactic that they've given up and relied more on actually filing lawsuits and just really respecting ideas of self-defense of communities, because the police are not willing to work with, you know, with them. So that's kind of been cool, because that kind of language is in the document, but in practice has been proved wrong. And so, like, as that's been a point of, like, unity for anarchists, like, even though that language is out there, because people have, like, what it's like, whatever they tried, and they realized that, like, that doesn't work. So we kind of have come together on that issue. But you can't really talk the police down from, like, you know, doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, especially if they're trying to pull COINTELPRO type stuff and pit groups against each other. Let's take a quick musical break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Sarah Lee from the Greensboro ALKQN Defense Group, and we'll be back in just a few. Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org.
Let it all hang out, but you won't fool me.
Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org. This is The Final Straw. I'm your host, Bursts of Goodness. And a hearty welcome to the folks at KXCF in Marshall, California. We're going to continue our conversation with Sarah Lee, who is offering support for the Almighty Latin Kings and Queens Nation in North Carolina that's just focused, or just been the focus of this raid by the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And let's see if we can get her back on the line.
Hello?
Hey, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So a quick question. Just my understanding is you identify as an anarchist, and I wonder, you've probably been asked this before, how is it as an anarchist working with, like, do you have any conflicts about working with a hierarchical grouping like the Almighty Latin Kings and Queens Nation?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I am totally unapologetic about it on my, like, personal level, because these are not just political comrades, they're friends and, like, extended family. But then practically speaking about it, you know, we have a lot of internal dialogue about how different, like, the differences and the mutual ground that we exist in. And the story is kind of twofold. One is that both the Nation and anarchists in Greensboro are groups that have been pretty, like, chewed up and spit out by the greater social justice liberal, like, industrial complex. Greensboro, of which there's, like, a very strong one, because of the civil rights history. There's, like, a lot of foundations and, like, funds and centers and all that good stuff that have, you know, used anarchists and used people in the Nation for money, for free programming, for all that. And then just whenever we actually need, like, material solidarity, like actual help, are just totally not there. And except for there's one place, the Bloomberg Community Center, that the Nation still has a good rapport with. But so we kind of came together over, like, yo, all these people say that they want, you know, that, like, racism is bad, that, like, capitalism is bad, but, like, what are they going to do about it when we actually have a situation that's going down where we need support, whether it's, like, direct confrontations with the police and arrests and court proceedings and support, like, for that, or whether it's just, like, being allowed to fully express our beliefs on the system, which is, like, which for the nation and for anarchists with the police is a pretty united statement, which is like, we don't want them. There's no good ones. And like, we want them out of our neighborhoods and our communities. Like, we want to be allowed to defend ourselves and like implement our own ways to keep each other safe. So like that on that issue is like very clear that we were coming from the same place. As we like organize and have different ways, it's really just been the fact that like everyone has been super open to dialogue, and like sometimes, you know, Jay will forget that he's dealing with a not heritable organization and kind of bark something that's like an order, and we'll kind of all be like, hey, here's how we communicate these issues. And he's like, oh, cool, I just forgot, because like, you know, and sometimes when I need to get something done and I say it needs to be done, it gets done, because that's how the nation works. And like, the other thing that I think is really, really important on a critique of a non-hierarchical structure is that I, as an anarchist, like autonomy is one of the most important principles for me to actually live in practice. And like, these are autonomous men and women who have made these decisions to organize this way as adults who know their lives and know their needs. And if this is the way that they need to organize to, like, protect themselves and their community, then I'm, like, have no fucking place telling them not to organize that way. And I will say that, like, I think that because Jay, like, he sees himself as a leader, but he is not a tyrant. And, like, he is absolutely, like, he's very flexible about how he implements certain things that probably in other cities are not flexible. And so I make no claim to defend any, like, things that go down in the Alameda Light King Queen Nation and other cities that I'm not involved in. And I totally understand people who have come and maybe had bad experiences with that the structure of this place. But you know what? People tell me all the time about, like, oh, I met all the anarchists in that town. They're dicks. Like, they are mad hierarchical. Like, if I don't look like them, I can't hang out with them. Like, you know, they're a community just like any other community, and, like, hierarchy exists in all different forms. Sometimes it's explicit and sometimes it's more nuanced, the way that we have to deal with it. And so I think that actually sometimes their hierarchy being so explicit allows a really clear critique of it in a way that they're able to, like, both look at and understand and defend. And, like, it would be really rad one day if the nation decided to maybe do away with a strict hierarchy. But right now it's working for them, and they're all adults who, like, know what they're doing. And so I just say, hey, diversity of tactics, diversity of fronts, like, we're dealing with a lot of the same ish. So as long as it's not directly affecting us, like, that's not really my business to tell them to dissolve their hierarchy.
Okay. That's definitely pretty clear.
Are you there?
Yeah, definitely. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fair enough. I don't want to loom on that question too much, because there's a lot of other stuff to cover in the next 13 minutes of the show. So
totally.
Thanks for addressing that.
I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'm down to talk about it any other time all day long. But now we got to focus on the actual, like, we got bigger things like the feds to deal with.
Well, you mentioned grand juries, and grand juries, to my understanding, are common law or, like, pre-constitutional mode for the government to deal mostly with infrastructural issues in cities and states. And currently grand juries are used to determine whether criminal charges can be brought against parties. What are the implications of grand juries being used against political organizations, in particular the lack of transparency and the denial of Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination?
I'm really kind of doing my, like, I think a lot of us are like, oh, wow, well, we've heard about grand juries a lot because anarchist comrades across the country deal with them, and they also seem like really nebulous allegations, and they seem like these cases that are always allowed to stay open indefinitely and accrue more evidence, and, you know, the subpoena process is really scary, and, like, if you don't cooperate in a grand jury, we see what has happened in cases where that is. So, but a lot of it is going back and, like, doing our homework, because the term grand jury is just always thrown around, and we're like, oh, that means, like, a really big, scary, like, federal, like, takeover of a case that on a state level might not be as scary. But I guess more what I can speak to is the way that RICO is being used, which is, we touched on for a second. And what we were talking on the break, it was created Rico, it was created in the late 60s to kind of formally, on the auspices, formally stamp out the remainder of organized crime syndicates, like the old mafia families. But as history has shown, was very quickly adapted to be used against political organizations, and then increasingly with like street organizations and people of color-led urban organizations, and as also the union-busting tactic. And I think the kind of Achilles heel of RICO is the fact that it does have to be proven, the charges do have to be proven to affect interstate commerce, which luckily in this situation, those moments where you could call affecting interstate commerce are some of the weakest in the case. Like one involves a fraudulent check, which is really just a misdemeanor, and the other involves like I can't remember. So
grand juries aren't even supposed to deal with misdemeanors at all. So
what did you say?
Grand juries aren't even supposed to deal with misdemeanors at all, from my understanding. They're only to deal with like potential felonies.
With felonies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't even, like, that's confusing in itself, because some of these seem, well, first of all, some of the charges are straight up thought crime. Like, so-and-so said to so-and-so, maybe we should do this. You know, and because of, they do use, unfortunately, they use the hierarchy and the structure of the nation to say, well, if King James mentions anything, it's an order, which is just not, I mean, practically that's not true, you know. I guess the thing that we're kind of realizing is so similar to grand juries that are dealing with conspiracy and terrorist charges that a lot of leftists, anarchists deal with, is that it allows the feds to team up and collaborate on a state level and interstate level on investing for up to 10 years, you know, surveillance, infiltration, and concentrated just intimidation of groups until they see fit strategically on their end to unleash the indictment. So one of the things is like, they haven't reached the 10-year mark on this case. It's been 5 since they started it, but we're trying to think, okay, why now? You know, like what else is going on in North Carolina, you know, and try to figure out on our own end, what is the conspiracy there? Like why now? And, try to think a couple of steps ahead. But, I definitely see that, like, we're hoping to connect with people who have worked on grand juries across the country to see how they have, how they've strategically worked to build up a good defense around this, and how they've also worked with, like, local communities to kind of undo the demonizing that has happened through what seems like really scary stuff, like conspiracy what was listed in the indictment. So we definitely like still have a lot to learn, and I'll need a lot of support and like knowledge from all the folks, you know, out west and the Midwest that have been dealing with this for over 10 years, just on a little bit different front. But I think that when we compare notes, we're going to find a lot of similarities.
Okay. Well, that's, I mean, that's some freaky stuff. I mean, I haven't really heard very much talk about grand juries since the early 2000s and mostly green anarchist stuff, but just all the presentations that I was able to be present at and discussions around it, they were just, very scary. And as far as, and it really putting so much pressure on breaking down communities, trying to turn people against each
other. Totally.
With the whole fear of, you know, none of the internal aspects of it are supposed to be talked about in public. There's no media present for it. You can't claim your Fifth Amendment, you know, like Fifth Amendment right against protection against self-incrimination, because the judge can just rescind it and give you immunity. Yeah, it's scary. Do you want to say anything else about the case and about how to give support to the like LKQN?
Yeah, we're running a website called ALKQNsupport.com. We have a PayPal page. We're looking at, up to $70,000 in legal fees, and that's not even including the money if some of the brothers do get to get off on bail on Tuesday, we're definitely going to have to work with bondsmen because we're not going to be able to afford the full bail. So we are looking at both raising money that we probably aren't going to be able to, you know, replenish. And then as of right now, in another, like, really sad twist, King Jay, who's the kind of the pin, the you know, the center of this case, like, if he gets off, everyone gets off, has been appointed by their appointment system, an attorney who's very good in his practice, but has never dealt with this kind of case before, and is generally considered a personal injury lawyer, and does not live in Greensboro. So we are looking to have to raise money for private counsel, hopefully for Jay. Most of the other guys have gotten pretty good, appointed people. Money, you know, as everyone knows with this stuff, money is the key. Like, if we can't get the funds, then we're going to have to, you know, work as a community to build a defense and help and work really closely with the lawyers, because they're not going to be able, you know, maybe not going to be able to do it on their own. So the PayPal account is there. On tomorrow or the next day, we will have one of the distros in Greensboro called Negate City Press is going to have, like, a lot of stuff that we normally distro, different punk stuff, different anarchist stuff. It'll be cool. And you can, like, if you throw in some money in the PayPal, we will just send you whatever you want. There might also be some letterpress stuff and fancier stuff there. So we're going to kind of work on that. We do have an email right now. And if someone is able to donate but would need the money back for sure within, like, a year, the way that some funds have done it, even we could kind of talk and see about that. And our email in general is gsolegaldefense@riseup.net. So for anyone who has experience with this or, you know, wants to help out and just whatever, you can hit us up on that.
Well, thanks so much for spending the hour with us. And good luck, and I'll keep trying to make space on the show for upcoming events and any changes that happen in the case.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate it, and thanks so much for talking, because we need to fight this on all fronts, and media is one of them, because there's been a pretty concentrated demonization of these people, and I, as anarchists, know what that's all about. We get demonized all the time. So it's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. I'll talk to you later. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Okay.
Take care. Well, that about marks the end of the show. So you've been listening to The Final Straw on Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org, and hopefully you're picking it up at KXCF out of Marshall, California in Marin County. And we're going to close out with some Silver Mount Zion in a second. Stay tuned if you're listening live for Brian's show In the Drift. Anything special planned for today?
Lots of good ambient music and some experimental stuff too.
Lots of good ambient music and some experimental stuff.
All good.
All right, I'm actually going to change it. Let's hear some Elliott Smith. And
The Final Straw is also available at KXCF 91.7 Marshall, California.
The Final Straw is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Cafe, 48 Commerce Street, Asheville, North Carolina, featuring organic coffee and milks, lots of tasty vegan treats, great pastries that they bake in-house, good book selection, and a calendar of events. And that can be found at www.firestormcafe.com. Have a great week.
would say you make a perfect angel in the snow, all crushed out on the way you are. Better stop before it goes too far. Don't you know that I love you? Sometimes I feel like only a coal still alive that fell down here to lay beside you.
Severed limbs litter the battlefield. We're running like rats from a burning sky, but it's nothing to warm our bodies. Lie in wait, knife in hand, for the few remaining angels. Pray or talk to yourself. Someone told me that it might help.